Transmission commence in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Level 7.
RandomChatter.com presents
the Strategic Homeland Intervention Enforcement and Logistics Division.
Do you copy?
Perimeter breach.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case files.
Authorizing.
Just call us S.H.I.E.L.D.
Access granted.
Coulson, get back to base.
Welcome back, agents. I trust you have all been suitably briefed on the most recent encounter. We'll be your hosts on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files. I'm Director Shepard.
And I'm Director Stolte. My face hurts.
I bet your feet hurt, too, wearing those heels, man.
They are uncomfortable.
Yeah. Well, you've all been authorized to undergo debriefing on the most recent mission from Agent Coulson and his operatives presented to the public as a dramatic hour-long television series known as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Fortunately, you've all been cleared to know the truth. And the truth is that this was another really interesting episode. I am pleasantly surprised with how they're moving along. I don't know if this was the best out of the first four here, but... after first review, I had some real good high points, and I felt that it advanced some of the storylines. There was actually a lot more going on in it than I realized to start with, though, I don't know, a lot of stuff doesn't really seem to stick with me in this episode like it does in other episodes, but we'll get into talking a little bit about that. I don't know if you had any first impressions here for it.
Yeah, similar thoughts.
Okay. So why don't you
I did enjoy it, though. I did. It was very entertaining. I like entertaining.
Definitely entertaining. That is true. So why don't you tell everybody what entertained us?
Well, what entertained us was episode 4 of season 2 called Face My Enemy. Now, this was interesting. You wrote this here, too, but I have actually also seen this as I Will Face My Enemy. I've seen that title out there.
Yeah, it started showing up a couple days before, maybe the end of last week. I actually tweeted the Whedon-esque account and asked them, and they said that it was Face My Enemy.
Okay, so Face My Enemy.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
It aired on October 14th of 2014, and this was written by Drew Z. Greenberg and directed by Kevin Tancharoen. So let's break down what happened, and then we'll talk about some of these little issues you were referring to.
Okay.
Santa Maria, the church. Santa Maria, the church. That church may have burned, but inside the painting has been spared.
Oh, it's a miracle!
It is. That is the power of holy art, and of course the alien writing on the back of that holy art.
That's probably it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably why S.H.I.E.L.D.'s after it. Coulson and May will stop at absolutely nothing to get that painting. Spying, espionage, undercover work, dancing. They'll do whatever they need to, even with low scores from Lynn Goodman, Bruno Tagnoli, and Carrie Ananaba. They will acquire their target. Now, that's unless, you know, General Talbot gets to it first. He's always there, him and his mustache hanging out. But a little more investigating reveals that it's actually not Talbot after all. It's Hydra in the latest digital disguise mask, now available from iTunes and the Android store. So can fake May fool Coulson long enough to find out why he wants that painting? And can the real May fight as well in her negligee as she can in a sparkly dress?
All very, very intriguing questions.
Yes.
I'm
willing to watch that scene multiple times in order to get those questions.
Right. I was having a little flashback in my head here, just trying to remember that. So, excellent.
I can't believe I was the only one seeing that.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's important to do the research for this show, for this podcast, you know?
That's the sacrifices we make.
Yeah, yeah. So, before we get into talking a little bit about the episode, there is some new news, sort of S.H.I.E.L.D. news, other than getting into kind of like names of upcoming episodes and stuff like that, which seems like people are not completely crazy about. There was a new comic series that was announced at New York Comic Con over the last weekend, and it will be featuring Howard Stark who is Tony's dad, as well as Agent Peggy Carter. And it is called Operation Sin. Operation S-I-N, all with the periods in it. It's going to be a 5-issue miniseries. It takes place in the 40s and 50s. It's going to start in January of 2015, and will just be featuring these characters that really haven't had a lot done with them, in this time frame. They've been talked about and stuff like that. So that sounds interesting. It will presumably tie into the Agent Carter TV show in some fashion, though probably not directly, because as we found out, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which is the movies and the television show, are a little bit different than stuff going on in the comics, so that's possible. And then I don't know, Josh, have you been keeping up with all the movie news that's been coming out lately, just in terms of what people are talking about for the upcoming Marvel films?
Have I been keeping up with it? I've been trying my best to keep up with it because, man, after New York Comic Con, it seems to be coming fast and furious.
There's definitely a lot of stuff out there. Well, there had been some talk about Robert Downey Jr. showing up in Captain America 3 and not Iron Man 4, and then rumors about what the storyline could be starting with Captain America 3. The current rumors are that they are going to be doing the Civil War storyline. Now, this is not the blue versus the gray. This is the red, white, and blue versus the iron, yellow, and red. So if fans of the comic universe will recall, about 10 years ago, there was a miniseries, but it was more like a maxi-series kind of event called Civil War that pitted...
It was an ongoing crossover storyline, right?
Yeah, there was a core series and then all sorts of offshoots, and it affected, every comic book out there and stuff. And it pitted Iron Man versus Captain America, and there was a superhero registration act that Iron Man was for, Captain America was against, because he thought it would mess with people's civil liberties, and all the superheroes took sides, some with Iron Man, some with Captain America. So that's the rumor for the upcoming direction the movies are going, and I would think that if this... is where the films are going. This could lead to big things with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., considering that, S.H.I.E.L.D. has been broken down, has to be rebuilt. It would be a great time, as they get rebuilt, to start doing superhero registrations and things like that. Now, Captain America 3 isn't scheduled until May of 2016, which would mean that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. would have to last into its fourth or fifth season to kind of take advantage of this. So, we'll have to see how things go, but something interesting to look forward to and potentially speculate on as we move forward here, especially into season 3 in a post Age of Ultron sort of world.
Yeah, if I had to bet, though, I would say even no matter what happens, as of 2016, the writers of the show have probably planned for multiple story ideas as these movies progress.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure it's been, bandied about by them when they're coming up with story flow ideas.
My concern would just be having the series Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. make it that far. I think we both might have thought that season one, it might not have gone beyond season one, though it did get better towards the end. The ratings are not fabulous this year, though I don't know how much that matters to ABC and Disney and Marvel at this point. I was talking to someone at my office and saying maybe they look at this as an outlet to use, to keep Marvel stuff happening in between the movies. And regardless of what the ratings are, they're just going to keep renewing the show, which would seem kind of weird, but it also... there's some weird perverse logic to it as well.
There is. I'm not even sure it's that perverse. It makes a lot of sense. What I would be afraid of is that because of low ratings, if it kind of continues, although it's getting a little bit better word of mouth now, so that's good,
mm-hmm.
That they would start cutting the budget and the quality might diminish.
Right, because they wouldn't be able to get the advertisers paying as much as, if the ratings were lower, the advertisers won't pay as much.
Right. But on the other hand, there's been good word of mouth, and I've even heard rumors that Robert Downey Jr. would love to be on the show in some capacity.
It seems like anybody would love to be asked to be in a Marvel superhero film, or so they say. Everyone except for Keanu Reeves, I guess. When they asked him about Doctor Strange this last week, he's like, probably not. But I bet
he said, probably not. But that's just
that's good. It's kind of a Nick Cage, Keanu Reeves sort of mix.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't practice that. Sorry.
Jeremy Renner, who plays Hawkeye, has also said he'd love to have a cameo in here, which would fit with things that are coming up. I mean, there's these rumors about Mockingbird being on the show, and Mockingbird and Hawkeye are kind of a couple in the comic book, so I think that would be cool. There's also been people speculating that it might be possible once the Netflix series comes out, which is going to be in early May. It's going to start in early May. There's a number there. Daredevil would show up on S.H.I.E.L.D. Now, it's kind of a different, not genre. What do I want to say? Just the tone, I guess. It seems like the Daredevil show is going to be more of a, gritty kind of New York street sort of feel to it rather than this high-tech spy thing. But there's always that possibility that, he could just show up, or they could be doing something in New York, and he's there, So I don't know.
Yeah, well, even just little cameos of people that are in the Marvel movies, I think, would improve ratings, but also improve word of mouth, after people tuned in to see it. If it continues with this quality, they might stick with it. So there's a couple different reasons that they could have those guys show up.
Yeah,
I'm sure that
good.
Might blow some of their budget there, though, especially Robert Downey Jr. Man, 20 years ago, if you had told me that Robert Downey Jr. would have been as integral to a franchise, I wouldn't have believed you.
Oh, yeah. It's incredible, the fact that he, has this kind of pull right now and is as popular as he is. I mean, it's great. I think it's great in kind of the same way that John Travolta was able to reinvent himself. Robert Downey Jr. has, done the same thing. So,
mm-hmm.
So let's get started talking about the show. And actually, before we start talking about this week's episode, I want to just bring something up with you that I want to talk about from last week's show. I felt when we were discussing the show, there was another piece. There was something like just kind of in my brain where it's like, I'm missing something. There's something else I kind of wanted to say about the episode, which was influencing or making friends and influencing people. And what occurred to me on another viewing of it after we recorded last week is that the same way that the S.H.I.E.L.D. and S.H.I.E.L.D. versus Hydra are two sides of the same coin. The way the title worked with those two organizations kind of fit in with it all as well. So Simmons was actually getting people to like her. So she was making friends, right? But Hydra was forcing compliance. They were influencing people and kind of, even more nefariously, I guess, like against their will, I would add in there. And I just wanted to bring that up because I feel that there was a lot of stuff that we touched on that was interesting, but I also felt that, I feel like I kind of was looking so deep, I kind of glossed right over this kind of title, issue here. So I just wanted to bring that up, and if you had any comments on that. So,
yeah, she was. I think we may have even mentioned that she was making friends or trying to make friends as she was working for Hydra. I guess Hydra was literally making friends. They were creating friends. They would just mold them and shape them and then turn them on when they were ready.
Right. Yeah, that's true too. So it's it's interesting to see again how the two organizations are. They're working towards the same thing. I mean, each organization wants to have some level of control, but the ways they're going about doing it are entirely different, in which, we discussed a lot of that last week. So, anyway, just kind of wanted to bring that up Because I thought it was interesting, and I'm thinking other people might have seen that, and I didn't want to think we had missed that. So, but now let's get into talking about this week's episode, Face My Enemy, which the title here for this one I felt also, you know, lends itself to the storylines that were happening in this episode. Obviously, you've got it from a very literal standpoint. You've got Coulson facing Talbot. And trying to come to some agreement with him, you know, Coulson sees him and thinks his cover's blown. And then, you know, Talbot's acting kind of weird. They work out this whole exchange plan. And, you know, Coulson, it feels like he's stepping into a trap. But unfortunately, he's stepping into a trap that he still can't see because he thinks he's dealing with Talbot. But it's not actually Talbot. It's really Hydra. So you've got that sort of Face My Enemy. Then, as you mentioned in the right up at the beginning, we've got Agent May basically facing herself, but also the enemy, right? Another Hydra agent using the mask technology. What'd you call it here? The digital disguise mask. And then Fitz, in a really interesting third subplot here, he's sort of facing his fears and coming out of his shell. I mean, I think that's, you know, I think that could be seen as sort of, you know, facing your enemy, that he is, like, the self-doubt that's in him or anything like that.
Right. Yeah, I'm really intrigued by this Fitz storyline. I'm not sure it's going at the pace that I want, but because it's, like you said, like a third subplot, you know, you don't have to overthink it each week, and it's kind of going slow, which I guess in reality it probably would, but it's very interesting. It was really nothing that I expected as I thought all summer about what was going to happen to him. I kind of like it.
I agree. I thought they were just going to, you know, bring him back and, you know, he was going to be damaged a little bit or, you know, whatever, but obviously, you know, with the direction they're going with him having all these difficulties and the fact that Simmons is away, which would seem like that would, you know, help him in his healing, but, you know, she's obviously doing her own thing. It's interesting because we are getting to see Fitz, who's never been really, he's always was hanging out with Simmons last year. So now we're getting to see him hang out with the guys. And this episode just has that great scene with him and Mac and Hunter at the end, which I thought was really sweet. The fact that Fitz, you know, he couldn't put anything together. You know, he's still having trouble talking. And then he sits down, and it's kind of when he finally relaxed and, like, actually wanted to engage with them. Like, boom, the words just kind of came right out of his mouth. He didn't stutter or anything. I don't know if you noticed, you know, the change there.
I completely noticed that.
Okay.
Yeah, it really stood out to me, actually. You know what? I also find it kind of interesting that not only, you know, is this kind of a cool storyline with Fitz and showing where that character is going because of this injury and because of who he was, but it's also making the characters of Mac and Lance Hunter, it's making them more trustworthy to me. You know, their interaction is even, you know, considering Hunter's done some questionable things with this team, it's making them more likable and trustworthy as characters because of the way they're treating Fitz. Because, they're, especially Mac. You know, and I mean, right now at this point, it would really shock me if these guys weren't completely good, weren't on the side of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
Not that I'm saying they aren't right necessarily, but...
Well, you never know. I mean, you kind of assume that. And it's interesting that you say that, because I was thinking... I mean, they're definitely... It makes, you know, the interaction of one character with another is how you get to know who each character is, right? So Hunter interacting with Coulson, or Hunter interacting with Fitz, or Hunter interacting with May, or whatever it is, you know, we get different aspects to his character. And I agree with what you're saying about Hunter and Mac being very likable, but it never really occurred to me that it also kind of makes them trustworthy. I guess by us liking them, we want to trust them. Maybe that's what it is, you know, I mean, and
oh, yeah, yeah.
What is trust like in, you know, in the real world when, you know, we're working with somebody, it's, you know, do they do what they say they're going to do and do they follow through on things? And, you know, that's what, you know, where trust is either earned or given or things like that. And then when they don't do what they're supposed to do, you know, you start taking trust away. So
sure. Well, Hunter's proven himself to be a very reliable agent, you know, for the most part. And like at the beginning of the show, you know, he was doing his little James Bond thing and seducing the girl to get what they needed. And he was all very good. And he's helping them. And he hasn't really betrayed them.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, he's kind of a rogue, kind of a renegade. But when you see him interact with Fitz and treating him in a respectful way, it makes him more makes him seem nicer, I guess.
Yeah.
That's a real simple way to put it, but that's all I can really say about it. That's how I feel about him.
Well, and I thought that was a really great scene with him because as we've seen from the past couple weeks, Mac, he just treats Fitz as a normal guy. It's like, okay, you're having trouble communicating. I'm going to, you know, I'll help you out as best I can. I'm not going to, like, make fun of you for it or ignore you or whatever. But we really haven't seen Hunter interact with Fitz yet. And just that moment at the end when, you know, it's almost a, it's kind of one of those weird social outbursts sort of situations where everyone's been discussing their exes throughout the entire show, and Fitz he's been there for the conversations, he's just not taking part. So all of a sudden for him to just jump in and go, well, you know, I don't have an ex, but there was a girl I liked and she didn't feel the same way, so she left. And it's like, wow, that's kind of oversharing. And, you know, there's that moment where Hunter just pauses and you're like, is he just going to say something like,
that's what I thought,
crass?
Yeah.
But he doesn't, you know, he's like, oh, well, it's her loss, mate, you know, and, you know, here's the teamwork and have a beer and, you know, hip, pip, pip, cheerio and all that. So.
Because that's what they say in England.
Because they know, do. They do that.
When they're toasting.
And, but, yeah, and also you're right. Where, it does, you know, it really makes him feel likable and just. It makes me feel good about Fitz, and it feels like it's the right fit for Fitz at this point to be working with these guys. It's because he really hasn't, like I said, he really hasn't trusted anybody else. I mean, he worked with Sky a little bit, but Simmons was like his number one person. And Ward was the only other guy that really he was closest to. And, of course, that did not end well.
No.
So.
Well, you can see why he's a little bit, you know, questionable, not trustworthy of everybody. Mm-hmm. But also the scene where he was taking Hunter to help him save the bus. And, you know, he really took Hunter because he was the only one that didn't know anything. and you know, he made him, I don't remember what he was doing, holding the wires or something that shocked him. But
yeah.
but Hunter went along with it. You know, he could have said, no, what are you talking about? Let me go do this. But he just kind of went along with it. So, yeah, I don't know. Those characters are growing on me.
Now, maybe I missed this, but why did he take him? Because he didn't know anything?
The other ones were working on, you know, computer issues, technological issues that they were smart enough to know about and understand and be able to handle.
Oh,
and
right.
Basically,
okay, yeah.
You know, Hunter was just he was just a
Yeah, and that was just great. Fitz trying to explain whatever he, you know, it's a, yeah, very nicely done. So
who was the country singer back in the, you know, popular in the 70s that had the stutter?
Oh, Mel Tillis?
Really. Yeah.
From Cannonball Run movies?
Yeah. I just watched that. Yes.
Yeah. Need to show those to my kids. So, anyway, we've got a lot of if you like spy episodes, I think this is probably one of the most spy-heavy episodes. I mean, this is, you know, got people in disguise, you've got special gadgetry, we got people, you know, breaking into compounds, pretending to be other people so they can steal stuff, but then they've been double-crossed, so they have to go steal other stuff. It's got the, you know, fights with the agents and things like that. A lot of good, you know, SHIELD on Hydra action in this one, I guess.
SHIELD on Hydra action, yes.
SHIELD versus Hydra, how about that? That'd be better.
Yes, that's good too.
Okay.
I agree with the. It reminded me. This is kind of dumb. This maybe is not the best thing to remind me, but the whole thing with Coulson and May kind of reminded me of the end of True Lies with Arnold Schwarzenegger, Jamie Lee Curtis.
I got that vibe just a teeny bit. Yeah.
But it was that kind of a spy feel, you know, like they were going to that dance, that ballroom dance to get into that. Why is there always a ballroom dance whenever you need?
Was it
I need to go to more ballroom dances. I might be able to.
It was the Enchantment Under the Sea dance, right?
Yes, exactly.
Well, speaking about May and Coulson, we got a lot more backstory. This was very similar to the episode where they went to Mexico to find the agent that knew something about the baby that was stolen last season that turned out to be the 084 that turned out to be Sky. And do you remember that one where they were sitting? They took Lola and they were sitting in the car and they were talking while they were waiting for this guy to show up.
Right.
So we got a little bit of, you know, backstory. We got a lot more kind of backstory about their early adventures. You know, not anything super specific, but we found out they've worked together for quite a while. They had their first operation in Sausalito, which I think it's across the bay in Sausalito.
Where the nuclear vessels?
That's where the nuclear vessels are, right.
The nuclear vessels, yes. That's what I said. Nuclear vessels.
Across the bay. Yeah. No, I think they're across the bay in Alameda, not Sausalito. But anyway, Sausalito is on the other side of the bay as well. We also got into there was a lot of humor involved in this because Coulson kept wanting to talk about like a contingency plan for when he goes. What did he call it? If I go full on Garrett. I guess, like, if he goes crazy like John Garrett did, he wants May to be able to take him down. And she just kept, you know, putting it off and not wanting to talk about it. And I thought it ended in a really interesting place because she said basically that she is not ever going to put a bullet in Coulson's head. She would send him away, to the Australian outback?
Yeah.
Was that it? Because he likes kangaroos. Because
he likes kangaroos.
Yeah. But is that so? You know, from a character moment and from like a friendship moment, you know, oh, that seems pretty sweet. But okay, we're trying to rebuild the world's biggest spy agency here. Is that really the best way to go about it for your director to say, you know, I order you to kill me if I go crazy, and for her to basically, you know, she's a really good agent, and for her to go, no, I never would do it. I don't know, that just seems, I mean, from an emotional standpoint, it's like, oh, that's nice. But from a logistical standpoint, or, you know, the standpoint of the organization, it's like, no, that's horrible.
Yeah, well, logistically for both of them, that's bad. As far as Coulson goes, he needs to have more of a backup plan. He is S.H.I.E.L.D. right now. He's the backbone of S.H.I.E.L.D. And he knows, I would argue, more than anybody in S.H.I.E.L.D. right now. You know, maybe even more than Nick Fury knows, but although, you know, Nick Fury knows everything. But
uh-huh.
And so he needs to have more of a backup plan than just, hey, if I go crazy, you got to kill me. He needs to have some other resources that can take over if she has to kill him. And from her standpoint, yeah, like you said, you know, she needs to be ready to do what must be done. So,
yeah, I mean, you know, she expects, she was following orders the other week. Like, he told her, I can't remember what it was now specifically, but he told her to do something. She says, no, I'm going to do this. And he's like, no, you need to take care of this. And she's like, okay. And she wasn't happy about it, but she did it.
Well, and I think May's greatest asset, that's probably not the right word when I'm describing her in this episode, but is probably her loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
More than her strength as an agent, which she's very strong, but, you know, she doesn't want anything to happen to her friends.
Right.
Almost to a fault.
Now.
So it's interesting dynamic, but like I said, they need to have more than just the two of them. But I think one of the reasons he trusts her is because of her, such her strength and loyalty.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that, as a two-parter, there was a romantic relationship between them at some point? And B, if not, does May have some kind of unrequited love for Coulson?
I want to say yes, just because I like when that happens. Mm-hmm. But but I'm just not getting that vibe.
It seems like they're just two really good friends that have been working together a long time. They know each other's like ins and outs and are just great friends, right?
Yeah, okay. I mean, just very loyal to each other.
Okay.
But, I mean, you know, like I said, it could be, but I just don't feel it from either one of them.
Okay.
Maybe it's just sexual. May does that sometimes.
I didn't know, I mean, because we haven't, so two things. One is that she smiled a lot and, you know, was laughing in this episode, and if you've ever seen video or photos of Ming-Na in real life, I mean, she's a really happy, vibrant, smiley kind of person. But the character she plays on here is not. So it's very strange to see Agent May, like, breaking out in smiles. The weirdest one, I think, was when she got out of the car and she was like, you know, I would just kill for flat. She's like scowling, and then she turns on a smile that was almost too big and kind of fake, and then kind of just dances out of the frame and stuff. I was like, oh my gosh, this is gonna not end well.
Well, and you, even the looks on all the other agents' faces, you know, as they're listening to her laugh, they just had the shocked look on their face.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's, you know, I'm sure you know those people that, you know, that there's kind of usually just one way that they are, and then all of a sudden you see them in some different light and you're like, whoa, I didn't realize that they had feelings or that they could do that or whatever it is. And you know, I mean, these people, what's weird is that these people have been together for as long as they have. And I mean, May must really never smile and or laugh, or at least to the point where, with Sky, at least, I could see her joking about it, because she's working with May more than anybody now, since May's her SO. I could see that, you know, they might share stuff, but, you know, I don't know that May ever, quote, lightens up at all. I don't know.
No. She's either scowling and or kicking your tushy. So.
Or breaking a chair over a... I got to say, some of the stunts in the fight sequence were phenomenal. The fact that, you know, there was a lot of times I couldn't, like, tell. Well, I could tell which one was May just because they did the costume change. But they did such a good job of disguising the stunt actresses. And I'm assuming that Ming-Na was not doing a lot of the stunts. I'm sure there was some stuff she was doing, but not a lot of it. But there was that one shot where they jumped over the coffee table and it went to slow motion, and May grabbed Agent 33's head and just boom, slammed her down on the coffee table. That was
oh,
nice.
Oh, yeah. Oh, brutal.
Because it was like, oh, why are we going to slow? Oh, we're going to slow-mo so we can see this. Bam. So...
Now you'll have to forgive me if this was obvious, but it felt like this other agent, the Hydra agent that was disguised as May.
Okay, yeah, Agent 33. Well,
Agent 33.
She was
right.
The SHIELD agent that we saw, brainwashed last episode.
That's what I was going to ask. It was her, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, man, no wonder they wanted to brainwash her.
Yeah, well, because she had said she was a SHIELD agent, I believe. When May, it was either when May first met her when she broke into the hotel, and then when May got zapped, or it was when May was fighting her when she broke free. But
there was, right, and I thought it was her, but
yeah,
then I wasn't so sure. I mean, it almost felt like last week or whenever. Nah, I think it was the first episode when they did brainwash her, and at the end of the show, she, you know, she's like bringing papers to Whitehall or something like that. Like, they brainwashed her to be a secretary or something. But this makes a lot more sense.
That was last week.
Was that last week?
That was last week.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
I know. Well, it's... The episodes do seem to blend together because, I mean, they are trying to build an overall story arc. They aren't, you know, so when it comes back to remembering, it's like, okay. But, yeah, that was last week because that was the one where Simmons was there, right? She was trying to get Donnie to comply.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I'm enjoying this season so much that it's flying by. I can't even believe we're already on the fourth episode.
I know. We started early, too, and so this is, I mean, they're going straight through here, it seems like. I don't know if I don't see a break anytime in the next month, at least, here, so.
Nope, yeah, not if they're going to fit in Agent Carter.
Right.
But.
Right. Okay, so I'd like to talk a little bit about the big mystery that has shown up in this episode, and that is, who burned down the church? No. When the church burned down, why did this painting survive? I mean, it seems like we're to believe. Well, there's two ways to look at this. What's your thought before I get into that?
As to why it didn't burn?
Yeah.
Well, you know, my first thought after their little introduction there was it had something to do with that alien writing on the back of the painting.
Mm-hmm. That's good. I mean, I think there are two ways to go about looking at this. And I'm going to bring another Lost reference back into the show here. As our friend Stuart was mentioning, he was mentioning to me on Twitter, the other day that he saw the Lost reference that I was talking about last week with the intro of Simmons. Uh-huh. But he thought it was much more like Juliet's intro, which I think was at the beginning of season 4, because it was a woman, you know, getting ready to do stuff and all. But there is an episode of Lost called Man of Science, Man of Faith. And I see that this episode kind of breaks down on two different levels like that with this technology or with this the alien writing. And I guess this is the first time that we've actually that some character on the show has actually said it's alien writing too. That's something to take note of, because we've talked about, okay, there are these weird symbols, Coulson's carving stuff, Garrett's carving stuff, you know, there are these symbols, but never has it been referred to as alien before.
I know. I noticed that too. Who was the first one to reference that, or who was? Maybe it was. There was only one.
I believe it was Whitehall, Daniel Whitehall, who mentioned it in this one. But that was my thought as well. That somehow these glyphs, this alien writing, protects the outside. Almost in the same way that the obelisk was seeming to protect itself from people that weren't worthy to touch it, perhaps. That would be one way we could look at it. Now, as to why is there a compulsion for Coulson to be carving these glyphs on the wall or on, you know, a surface, how does that relate? I don't know. But the priest and the bishop seem to take it as a miracle, right? So kind of they are taking it as an act of faith, that, you know, they have the faith in this religious artifact, and there also happened to be these weird symbols on the back, but it was because that it was a picture of the Madonna and her child, which is why the painting didn't burn. Whereas, you know, like you and I are looking at it from more of maybe a possibly scientific term or scientific reason.
Did it seem to you as if the bishop maybe knew more than he was revealing?
It seemed kind of strange, you know, because he said he did have to vet this. Like, it seemed like there was going to be more with that. I guess it was all leading to the fact that, the painting was going to go to Gabriel Soto, and then it was going to go to the government for a review or something like that. So it could be, what do you say, it had to be verified. Like, the bishop said that we know that it's a miracle, And they use that more specific word miracle, and I want to come back to that in just a minute. But we know it's a miracle, but, you know, for everybody else, we have to, you know, get the proof in whatever way they were going to do that.
Yeah, it just seemed a little suspicious to me, but maybe I'm just a suspicious person. So then, yeah, my other, you know, line of thought with it could have been the writing that caused it not to burn, but my other line of thought is, well, maybe there was something special about this painting to begin with, and that's why the writing was there.
How are you saying that? I'm not quite following.
Okay, so either it was the writing that caused it not to burn,
right?
Somehow, or there was something special about the painting, and you could say a miracle, or you could say, you know, some sort of religious power.
Mm-hmm.
And that caused it not to burn. But because of that power is why the alien writing was on it to begin with. That's why someone put the alien writing on there.
Hmm.
So those were the sort of two lines of thought I thought about why it hadn't burned.
So like somebody tagged it like graffiti or something like that.
Maybe.
To indicate that it was special.
You had mentioned that you know, about this painting, this Madonna and Child. It's painted on wood.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was interesting because, you know, so far we've seen this writing, it's always been carved or engraved, you know, on mm-hmm. the obelisk. I guess you could say it was engraved, but
yeah.
It's never just on, you know, it's not just spray painted on.
Right, and people can't write it on paper. I mean, maybe they can, but we're just not seeing it represented that way.
Yeah, we haven't so far. Everybody has
Yeah, because John carved it into, like, metal or something like that, and mm-hmm. Coulson's been carving it into these, you know, into stucco or plaster or drywall or whatever it is.
Yeah. They're on sale at Walmart, remember?
Yeah. So. So they said that the painting was, I don't know, it was really old. I want to say, like, 500 years old or something like that, but that the writing or the carving, the symbols were recent. According to the newspaper story that is shown in the episode, it says that it's within the last decade, which would be different than it having shown up within the last year and a half, let's say. I would say that would make a difference as to kind of the story possibilities. But let's just say that it showed up in the last decade. What is, like, who is out there that would be doing this? Like, what would be going on? Any speculation?
I don't have any speculation as to who it was, but it's interesting because now the obelisk itself that we saw, we know that it was around back in the 40s during the war.
Yes.
And I don't know how long it was around before that because didn't Whitehall say in the first episode that some things aren't ancient or mm-hmm. something like that?
Yeah. Yeah.
So this one could have been relatively new. But that's all the way back in the 40s. So this was in the last decade. So that's in this century.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, right.
I mean, this just kind of blows my mind. So is this alien in some way that, like, it was done by wherever it originated? Or was it somebody here that was being, I don't want to say controlled, because I'm not sure Coulson is being controlled.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's almost like something is channeling through him.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's this concept of kind of automatic writing that we discussed a little bit an episode or two ago with, you know, you'd brought up Close Encounters of the Third Kind and how, you know, there's just a kind of a compulsion to do something, to build something or to carve something.
Yeah.
So let's look at this. So we've got an obelisk of alien design is found in the 40s and basically put away until the 21st century here. We've at the same time that the obelisk is found, most likely a part of an alien body is also found, probably dead. And that is put into some kind of research facility and work is done on that. Then at some point, fluids are extracted or reworked from the alien body, turned into a serum that can heal individuals, basically turn them around from their deathbed and rework their body so that it functions again. You know, rebuild organs, bone, skin, whatever it is. We don't really know exactly how that works. That gets used to a high level on Coulson and to a lesser extent on Sky, because I think I could argue that Sky's wounds were not as debilitating as Coulson's were, or maybe the time delay between the two was, you know, not as much.
Yeah,
like she was mostly dead, and he was probably pretty much all dead.
The difference between mostly dead and all dead.
To Blave. So then we haven't seen it in Sky, but we saw it in Garrett, and we saw it in and we see it in Coulson. Is that they have this compulsion to draw these symbols or carve these symbols into a surface. These symbols also existed in this, I think it was like a Russian facility back in the I Spy episode from, that was the fourth episode, I think, of last season. So these carvings have been around before, and then you've got someone else out there who has carved these into the back of this painting at a church in Miami, which is like out of all the places to go and carve stuff. Like, what is going on in this church in Little Havana, Miami, that makes it so special? It's just, I mean, we just don't have enough information, but even just trying to kind of think through it and like, what the heck are the writers thinking? Like, this.
Well, there's a lot of loose ends that we don't know, but I like that they're kind of piecing them together as we go. And hopefully they're all kind of working towards a center hub that will make it a little bit more explainable.
I keep thinking that once we know a little bit more about this doctor character, the Kyle MacLachlan character, that we'll get a little bit more answers, because it seems like we're going to see him a little bit more next episode, I would think, because Daniel Whitehall has now given Raina 48 hours, I believe.
Yeah.
Right? To get the obelisk back. So that means that she was on her way to Miami. Like, she needed to get wherever she was. She needed to get passage to Miami when Whitehall grabbed her and gave her that, whatever that shock device was, or who knows what it was. It was doing something weird to her. The skin on her hand, definitely.
It reminded me of the device in Iron Man that Obadiah used against Tony.
You know
Tony?
What it might have been? Yeah, it could have been based on the same technology, I guess. That neuro... it was like a neurotoxin thing or something like that. I can't forget what they call it. Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't even remembered that one from Iron Man 1. So she has to get the obelisk back because Whitehall wants that. Now, he obviously knows about the alien writing on the back of the painting, since he sent Bakshi in disguised as Talbot to get the painting. So, because Whitehall hasn't apparently aged a day between 1945 and 2014, and
nor
he wants
he
to get
updated the prescription in his glasses, apparently.
Yeah. He does. He uses the same lenses, or the same frames, I guess. So, like, what does he need the alien research for? Is it, maybe he's trying to uncover the secret of eternal life, I would say, but he's kind of already got something like that going for him. So, like, what else is there?
I think it has something to do more with obtaining more power for Hydra.
World domination.
World domination.
That's what they're looking for. Yeah, I don't know. There's all sorts of interesting stuff going on with that. So, you know, again, I'd love to hear from any of our listeners out there who have their own theories on what may be going on with this. I do feel that the writing had something to do with the protection of the painting, in the same way that the blood or whatever – the serum that they were able to extract from the alien body, you know, basically saved Coulson and saved Sky. You know, it's all part of the same thing. It's just we don't know how it all fits together.
Well, what I will say about, I mean, it seems like it's early in the season, and there is kind of an end game to the writers' ideas with where they're going with all this. So it's hard to speculate at the beginning of the season, I think, for us. But it gives us a lot of different puzzle pieces to kind of lay out on the table, face up, getting the edges ready, putting the corners in place. And now we can kind of start working our way toward the middle. So even though I feel like in this episode we're kind of running into these speculative walls like, well, what do you think that is? I don't know. But I think that's okay. I mean, I like when shows do that. I mean, if you come and, you know, comparing this to Lost again, that they did that all the time.
Yeah.
And it just made you come back for more because you're like, well, what does that mean? Why do they want it? What are they going to do with it? I mean, so far all we know is that, you know, it turns you to stone if you touch it, if it doesn't like you.
Yeah. Yeah.
By the way, that same exact thing happened to my iPhone when I updated it to, you know.
I think that's not stone. That's more like brick.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Right. So it's a little bit different.
Okay.
So I said I wanted to get back to the fact that the priest was talking about how this was a miracle, that even though the church burned, Santa Maria, the Church of the Flowers, I believe is what it was called, that the fact that the painting survived was a miracle. And it's interesting that they use the word miracle because for those that have seen Captain America, the Winter Soldier, now available on DVD and Blu-ray, not like I see any money from that, so I don't know why I'm saying that, but, you know, that's just what people say, right?
They could send you some money your way.
Oh, I would love it. You know, for every new sale this week for Captain America, the Winter Soldier, please send us a check here, care of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files. So there was a scene at the end, supposedly present day, where a Hydra agent has Loki's scepter and introduces these two characters in these cells. One is going to, you know, they will be revealed to be Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch. And instead of calling them mutants in some fashion, he calls them miracles. He said, this is the age of miracles, which may be the way that they get around using the mutant word, since that is now part of the kind of the X-Men lexicon and part of 20th Century Fox's stable of Marvel comic-related stuff. But just the use of the word miracle really harkened back to that scene for me, and I'm like, okay, so maybe this, you know, ties into some of these superpowered characters. It's like, you know, someone could see them as miracles, but they're also, you know, there's a scientific explanation as to why they are like they are. In the same way that, like, Thor, you know, he may seem to individuals here on Earth, he may seem like a god, but he's actually an alien from another dimension or, you know, area of space.
Realm,
yeah, you know. So it's all kind of perspective as to what people see. It's like these aliens may have these magical powers. Well, it's not magical powers. Maybe it's just the way their science works. Because there's that quote, I think it's Arthur C. Clarke that had said that any suitably advanced species, their science would be indistinguishable from magic. So just because we wouldn't be able to know better. But so anyway, just some things to think about. We'll see how that plays out, and maybe that's just a coincidence that they use that same word. I don't know.
Maybe so, but it is interesting though, and I'm glad you brought that up because it kind of gives me something else to watch for. As I say, you know, as we're putting all these pieces together, so that piece may not match the edge that I've got so far, but. It's going to stay in this pile for now.
Well, remember, I mean, and there's the S.H.I.E.L.D. writers and producers and are still using the hashtag on Twitter. It's all connected. So I don't think anything just happens on this series. we may not be able to put all the pieces together, and it may not be until like three episodes from now that we go, oh yeah, that makes sense because now we know this, and it's very obvious at that point. But you know, it's obviously it's not obvious now, so we'll see how it all fits together, and hopefully things will start to be a little more clear as we move on here. I did want to cover a couple. Well, there weren't really any references per se to Marvel Comics. Other than just like, you know, some character names and things like that that we've already discussed. I did want to discuss a couple of the pieces of technology they put on this show or on this episode. We had this cool retina scanner tech that we saw where Coulson was able to take a photo of this guy's eyes, and then it created a 3D wireframe holographic model that the retina scanner was able to read off a hologram.
That really, is a powerful selfie, man.
I do not know how that would happen. I mean, you know, they talk about, you know, photos really stealing your soul. I mean, that's like, that would be pretty bad. This one actually steals your eyes.
If you knew how it would happen, it wouldn't be as cool.
Well, yeah, exactly. Then we had the magic face technology that we had seen previously in Captain America, the Winter Soldier. I thought they used it to great success in this episode with making it look like, you know, the character actually was taking, you know, some kind of face mask off.
Yeah.
One of my
form fitted after you kind of place it on there.
Yeah. One of my coworkers said that Ethan Hunt and the IMF force really needs to step up their game. They've got to take that whole box with the 3D scanning technology in it to carve the face out of it. And S.H.I.E.L.D. just has this little piece of, I don't know, it's like fabric or plastic or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, something flexible. My favorite part of the whole mask storyline, or the aspect of the storyline, was at the end when Talbot, you know, he was explaining to Talbot, and Talbot's like, "You didn't know it was me?"
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, we're not that close.
I thought it was great because something was definitely up with Talbot at the beginning, and I too thought he was just being played. But when you watch it again, you realize that in the same way that when Agent 33 was playing May, when Bakshi was playing Talbot, he had no idea who this guy was walking up to him. So he was just playing off everything that Coulson said. He was like repeating stuff back to him. It was like,
and I didn't notice that at first. He did seem a little different, but I thought maybe it was the character hiding something, or you know, knowing something that Coulson didn't at the time. But
well, then I of course thought he was then working with Hydra as well. I'm like, oh my gosh, so he's a double agent, and oh no, wait a second, it's not even him. So
I had to cross that off of my notes. My Talbot is Hydra! !
Yeah.
Then I had to cross that off. Yeah.
And then there was another piece of tech. May had a little bracelet key card that worked on the hotel's doors. She just kind of held her little diamond-looking bracelet up to the door and boop, and unlocked
now,
it.
That's a device that I find almost too unbelievable because, frankly, I can't even get the hotel key card to work usually.
Well, you got to make sure it's facing the right way. You got to, you know, put the arrow into the slot.
I'll show you. Make sure you're in the right room too. So.
Yeah, which that's
sometimes a mistake.
I did do that this last weekend accidentally. I was like, oh, I'm on the entire wrong side of the hotel. So, and then there was a reference, but it was to Raiders of the Lost Ark, and I believe this is a Raiders of the Lost Ark reference. People may take issue with this, but
you can't take issue with this. It was
okay,
clearly
I mean,
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
All right, I'm just saying some people might not see it that way, but Coulson says laser grids. Why is it always laser grids? Reference to Indiana Jones's phobia of snakes there. So I thought that was a nice little shout out. And then I thought they were going to do the, what was it, entrapment with Catherine Zeta-Jones?
Yes, I thought the same thing.
I was waiting for them to do that, or waiting for Coulson to do that, and then May just walks through the laser. She's like, remember, they already know we're here, and she sets off all the alarms. That was that was great.
Great lines between May and Coulson. I hope they do more together just periodically in the show, because it was great.
I do like when we're able to have, two characters at a time, because it does, it increases the amount of interplay that those actors have together, and just to be able to create those moments. Whereas when we've got, you know, four or five characters standing around the table on the bus, great to see the bus again inside. I did notice they hadn't even fixed all of the shattered glass inside. Obviously, their budget is really low because they haven't even fixed up the inside of the bus. There's still shattered bullet hole glass from the end of last season.
Yeah. But, well, you know, what do you, they could at least put some, you know, duct tape over it or something so nobody gets cut.
Oh, I think it's safety glass. It's okay.
Oh, okay.
So, well, anyway, I think that's about all we've got for this week's episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files.
We hope you enjoyed this episode, so please make sure you leave feedback for us on iTunes. And you can contact us at email, of course, at shield@randomchatter.com, or on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is @AgentsPodcast, or our Facebook page is facebook.com/AgentsPodcast.
You can also check out the other podcasts that Josh and I do, Green Justice and Arrow Podcast, and our newest, Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast, both available via randomchatter.com. Also, all our shows are available in the iTunes Store and through Stitcher for Android or iOS. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please be sure to tell your friends about us. So, for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, this is Jay.
And this is Josh.
Signing off from Level 7. This podcast is not endorsed by ABC Television or Marvel Entertainment. The official website for Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. can be found at www.agentsofshield.com. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and related elements are copyright Marvel Entertainment, LLC.
Transmission terminated.